I'm Hillary.
And I'm Sandra. Coming up on the podcast, we're going to talk to a world-class luxury companion by the name of Madeline Fabre.
We're going to talk about everything from how she got into the business, how she stays safe, and how she gets down and dirty.
The Quick and the Dirty Podcast with Hillary Welch and Sandra Plagakis.
It's funny that we have a world-class luxury companion on the show because I've often joked if radio doesn't work out for me, if this little side hustle of podcasting doesn't work out for me, I would be sort of like a low to middle end call girl. But I would be like the economy call girl. You know what I mean?
It just sounds like so much work to me, though.
Well, no. When you think, first of all, hear me out. The brand name of my business would be called Not Your Wife. Think about it. Even though my body's a disaster, my ass is a perfect square, my boobs are too saggy, and I have a terrible attitude, and I basically starfish, I'm still not your wife.
Yeah, and you're not going to complain about like how he didn't empty the dishwasher.
That's right. We're not going to sit there, lie there and talk about our kids or what bills didn't get paid or any of that stuff. I'm not going to complain. I'm going to tell you how awesome you are afterwards. I'm going to be somewhat delightful. Well, as delightful as I can be. And leave quietly, take my money and go out the side door. I mean, am I not the perfect date?
That would be the perfect date. Absolutely. If you weren't looking for complications.
Well, this is what I'm saying, is that there would be lots of guys out there. One thing we've learned in this podcast is that one thing men love are people that aren't their wives. That's for sure. And guys like strange every once in a while, I've been told.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that there's totally a bit to that. Because sometimes you see women or men that people cheat on their spouses with, and you're like, why? Why did you choose that person? They're not even hot. And I think that you're right. It's just not their partner.
That's right. Not your wife. It might be a $1 million idea. I could get a lot of, regular looking women, right? Who've let themselves go like me.
And you have not.
Well, I mean, well, some in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. But it doesn't matter. I like it. And there's a lot of guys out there that'll like it. And I'll understand that they mostly like it because I'm not their wife.
I don't think I could ever do this. And it's not because I am a prude or a square. It's just that I'm not willing to put the effort in to please somebody else I don't care about. Like, that's
well,
so much work for
Come
me.
Come on. You never faked it, Hillary?
Well, yeah, but it's...
Oh, all of a sudden she's quiet. Oh, come on, Hillary. You faked it at least once in your life.
Oh, of course. But then at least it's for the benefit of somebody you cared about. Like, I'm not willing to put the effort in for somebody I could give two craps about.
Well, that's not true. Well, you're half right. Because, yes, sometimes you want the other person to think you had a great time and you faked it. And it's like, oh, I'm having the best time. I usually fake it because I want it to be over. Like, I'm not kidding you. It's like, I had an orgasm. It was great. Let's wrap it up now. Because, you know, Bill Maher is on it, Tim.
I came. I got what I wanted. Let's get out.
That's right. And sometimes when you're gone, I'll finish myself.
Oh my God, Sandra.
I know.
Oh my
Hillary,
gosh.
Not your wife. Get me a logo artist.
And this is why we don't work in this business and why our next guest is an expert.
We have talked to sex workers on this podcast before. We've even had a sugar baby on this podcast before. But do you know what a luxury companion is? Today on the Quick and the Dirty podcast, we're pretty excited to welcome world-class luxury companion, Madeline Fabre. Welcome.
Well, thank you for that lovely introduction.
Madeline, I have to ask you, world-class luxury companion, is that a self-prescribed moniker or did somebody else give you that?
Well, no. When I actually first started in April 2009, I was just an elite companion at that time. And I think over the years, establishing myself with my reviews, which I have over 100 reviews right now, all stellar, and my rating, you know, unfortunately, since I'm offering it's a service, so I kind of have achieved a 9.6 out of 10 rating. So I think over the years, I've established myself and my reputation as a world-class luxury company.
Oh, very nice. And so you have a good review on Yelp. That's great.
No, I'm not even sure there's a section for escorts, but no, it's more on other reviews, review boards.
Oh yeah, I know. I was totally just kidding. I'm a 3 on Yelp at best. Let's be honest. So let me ask you just to start things off. Mm-hmm. What exactly is a luxury companion? What is your job description?
So I would define it as that I offer quality companionship to local and traveling gentlemen and couples in Montreal and in Toronto at the moment. So the quality companionship meaning that I'm what you hear about a GFE. I'm a true like GFE. GFE stands for girlfriend experience. So that's what I offer ultimately. I'm sorry, my English is not my first language.
It's pretty good. It's actually pretty good.
So, the type of men and couples that I see, it's men that are kind of longing for a connection, where they, you know, long for that the intimacy that is lacking in their lives. It's not the absence of intimacy, but maybe just a lack. And so they find it with me because I'm able to connect with my clients, and I have a good sense of built to understand.
So what you're saying is it's more than just about sex. Like this is about offering a momentary but a true connection.
Correct. And that's what they say about me, that they truly feel that like, I'm a real girlfriend, and they feel understood and cared for, and I thank my empathetic nature because that allows me to do that. So I'm very grateful, and it makes it easy to do my job, actually.
Well, okay, this is that you've been doing this since 2009, so that's mm-hmm. a long time. If mm-hmm. I was to hire you as a luxury companion, and mm-hmm. you say world class and traveling people. So mm-hmm. I could hire you. I could say, listen, I have a business meeting in Geneva this weekend. I need you to come with me. I'm taking you out to a bunch of dinners, business meetings, and so on. You would be the girl that would be hired to pretend to be a girlfriend that weekend, or does everybody know what's going on?
Yes. Well, it depends, because sometimes you can role play. It's happened where I can pretend that I'm their girlfriend or their wife. I've been brought on conventions, so people don't know them actually. So me being present, it's not an issue. But also I've been on trips where I had to stay at the resort and I couldn't join them on their business endeavors. So it depends on the situation. So sometimes I am the girlfriend, mistress, the wife. And sometimes I'm not. I'm alone, and I, you know, keep myself busy. I go shopping.
So these people, they'll hire you out, send you to the resort they're going to be at. They know they have meetings all day, but at night they want to come spend some time with you, and you just kind of have to hide away until they're ready for you.
Yes. Well, I mean, on a resort, I'll go by the pool, and I'll go to the spa. And then they're back, at 4 or 5 o'clock, and we have the evening together, have dinner, and a little sexy time back at the hotel.
Oh yeah, sexy time. Yeah. I want to talk about the sexy time.
That sounds terrible. Not at all.
That sounds like the perfect day to me, actually. Okay, can
leave me alone all day. I got to put out it's at fine. Night. It's fine.
Can we talk about sexy time for a second?
Oh yes.
Okay, so you get hired by somebody. You agree to, go to a location with them. How well do you know somebody before you agree to travel with them? Because that is, you've given up a lot of power in many ways because you are traveling maybe in a strange country with someone you don't know that well. How well do you know these people before you travel with them?
So according to my experience, over the years, like establishing a connection, you know, it's not, I mean, for my part, I mean, it's quite fast. I mean, that they feel so comfortable with me after just one meeting. So in general, after a few meetings, they kind of want to spend more time. So our sessions become like more extended. And then they want to invite me on a trip. So in general, it's after meeting multiple times and even maybe for even a few years before they ask me on a trip. But I've been on others like that I haven't met any for the first time. And for example, I've went to Bonaire without meeting the person, the gentleman. So in that case, I screen. So there's ways of screening, so to ensure that my safety.
Yeah, like I don't think we're so much worried about their comfort. We're worried about you.
I have a bachelor's degree in psychology, so that helps a lot to understand people's personality and like what traits are needed to build the trust. But also there's, you know, I rely on email, like how it's written, the quality, the profession, you know, how professional it is, how educated they are. I ask them to introduce themselves, to talk about themselves, their hobbies, their interests, why they seek companionship, why me. I ask, depending if there's any red flags, I'll ask for a reference from a companion. And if it's the first time, well, I'll ask for a 50% deposit. That's just on a general, like for a session, one session. And of course, on a trip, like for this a guy I met in Bonaire, of course, I asked for a reference, going so far, you know, and not having met him before. So
I like that they have to put money down if you don't know them.
they do.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I got it. You know, can I want to be completely honest with you, Madeline. For me, I would have a difficult time having sex with someone that I found repulsive. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you have, you know, met a gentleman, he wanted sexy time with you, and you just couldn't do it?
No. I kind of fake it until you, what's the expression? You fake it until you make it.
Well, I've been married for 20 years. I know what that's like.
Oh, no.
I think at that point, I think technically you're faking it until
that's right.
You
yeah.
make it.
Yes, ultimately, yes, I agree. But in general, no, the guys are average looking and a lot of attractive, but average looking. Even the older gentlemen I meet, so I've met some 70-year-old, 75, 80, 80, the oldest was 82. So, but as long as they were respectful, you know, I have no problems and we get along. So no, I'm not that, I don't get really repulsed. I have one, honestly, my turn to be honest. there's one gentleman in my life that I won't get to that I see on a regular basis, and so actually now I'm kind of helping him to improve on his physique, so you know, to be less, maybe more attractive, to, you know, because he's longing for, you know, he's lonely and longing for companionship, and eventually I would love for him to find someone. So I think I'm kind of helping him to.
So you can get him off your hands? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, no. He's quite generous. So I get a lot of gifts, and he's very kind, and it's just... Yeah.
But eventually you'd like him to be somebody else's problem.
Yeah.
What about the 82-year-old Madeline? What are you going to do with that?
No, that was a lot. That was many years ago in Toronto. Maybe that was maybe like 6-7 years ago. Met him a few times, and he was a meteorologist. Yes.
Got it.
Correct.
Yeah. So, God, we probably know him.
We're going to Google old meteorologists right
no.
now.
So we were meeting, and poor guy, he was so kind, and he was, you know, of course he would have, by, you know, that age he has issues down there, so he, you know, he was on Viagra when he would see me, And another time he was on Cialis, and he is so cute. So getting an erection.
You're just the sweetest, Madeline. Oh, my God.
Well, I feel for these people. I mean, they have feelings, and, you know, and so he was, you know, he would be kissing, you know, and I'm trying to seduce him, and he's starting to get, you know, get hard, and like semi, and it's, you know, barely getting an erection, you know, just slightly. And so there's two things. So I don't know if for the men that might be listening, even though you're, you know, that at that age and you're barely getting an erection, you still can have an orgasm. So orally I was able to, you know, make him come, you know. So
what you're saying is at that age they can still have fun, but they're no good to us.
Yes. Well, I know. Yes, correct. I get, yeah, unfortunately. But I think even though at that age, oh, come on, like at that age, I think a lot of women, there's no longer an interest. So I guess it's equal. It evens out.
Well, when I'm 80, but that's true. At 82, the fact that he's still trying to get laid, good for him.
Yeah. And then, so a second time when we saw each other, and so that time he was on like Cialis, and he was like on laying on his back, and I was, you know, caressing, giving him affection, and, you know, trying to, you know, get an erection and help him. And, he was like barely heart, like you could just within the center could feel a little, like being a little more stiff. And he says, and you know what he said? He says, am I good enough to be inside you? Like, would it work? I said, he was like, because I would love to be inside you. And I said, oh, I am so sorry. I don't think so.
Why don't you just lie and say yes and pretend? Inside you right now.
Of course you would know. So I did my best, and then I was able to make him come again, like orally. And then I think after that, the last time I reached out to him, he said I would love to. No, he reached out to me saying that he says I can no longer see you, and it saddens me. I kind of get horny now, like on demand, so I kind of need it. Not on demand, like when I get horny, I kind of want it on demand. And so I feel like I apologize, but I can't, you know, see you anymore. And he said, honestly, like I'm getting less and less horny, you know. I was like, wow, imagine how sexually active he must have been, or his libido, like our sex drive would have been, like, in his 30s, 40s, 50s. It's incredible. So good for him.
Good for him and his 82-year-old dick.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, the men listening to this, they have hope, you know.
Okay. Well, where do we go from there, Hillary?
I don't even know. I just love that your approach to these people is, it's kind of heartwarming. Like, it's very tender, the way that you approach these people like they're human beings. Like, it doesn't sound like, of course you're getting paid. Of course it's your work. This is what you're doing. But it sounds like you truly care for these people, at least in some way. It's not love, but it's care.
I do, and that's entirely correct, accurate. I do care very, very much for their well-being and their level of happiness. And I aim to please, you know, I do my very best to please them and to fulfill any need that they're, you know, longing for, and for them to leave, extremely satisfied.
Right. It sounds like you are obviously selling a fantasy, and you are their fantasy girl, and that's what they're paying for. But I know this is a huge, broad question, but can you answer this question? What is it that men want? And go.
Depending on the type and personality of the person, it varies. So to the most simple, common, I guess it would say, would be the loving father and husband, seeking a connection, you know, because of lacking intimacy in his life, you know, with his wife, to the psychiatrist with a spanking fetish. I've seen a lot of different. So it's like you said, a connection, the fantasy. So it's either, you know, reconnecting and, you know, feeling loved and wanted and desired, care and cared for. The other, you know, another type is about, the ones that are a little bit more reserved and introverted, and they lack the social skills and communication skills. So it makes it a little bit harder to find a woman to establish a connection, you know. So the easier way is to see escorts. So, you know, it's kind of a given, you know, it's, they just pay and they get. So that's the asocial. There are men that want to maybe fulfill some fantasies. So they have fetishes like they're attracted to shoes and toenails, painted toenails, so like feet, mm-hmm. and nylon. They'll get aroused with those kind of type of objects. So that's
has there ever been someone with a fetish that you were like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that?
Oh no, some are pretty outrageous. I'll tell you about those that have never happened, but I do get those inquiries via email. But one that I've lived through was he loved the violin, and he played the violin. And once, you know, I got to his hotel room and, you know, opened a bottle of wine and, you know, we sat down and started talking and all that. And he started to tell me about how his views of, a woman. And the woman is like a violin. So he says, well, you know, I would love to play, you know, with you like you're my violin. Sat on his lap and kind of laid back and, you know, with my glass of wine in my hand. And he just started to hum the music and just kind of played me like a violin, like just handled me like I was a violin.
Wow.
So, yeah, and I was like,
he fingered you like you were a violin. Okay, I got it.
So I was like, but I was kind of on a high, an intellectual high, and trying to understand, like, how did this become, you know, so, like, what did he live through and what happened to, like, for it to shape this, you know, and as, you know, fantasy.
That's somehow less weird than I had expected when you were like, oh, let me tell you a story. This is pretty okay.
So a little more.
There's actually something sweet to that story in a weird way.
Like, it's kind of hot.
Yeah. He played me like a violin. Yeah, he did.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, thinking about it, I kind of remember afterwards, I think he asked me to sit down, I ended up sitting on the counter. And he kneeled in front of me and grabbed my heel, and actually started licking the top of my sandal, my stiletto heels, and kind of also starting like licking and sucking on the heel. So I mean, I'm like,
so he's a bit odd.
what you know? What's the expression? What's your fancy? I mean, what's the expression I'm looking for? What works for you? You know, like what?
Yeah,
the boat type of, you know, it's like, okay. So as long as he's getting a kick out of it and he's getting aroused and it's, you know, it's happy, I'm thinking about the hygiene, like how that you know, that's like, wow, I might be, I hope there's not rocks stuck to my heels or, you know. So I was just the hygienic part. I was like, oh la la.
Let me ask you back to pre-2009. How did you become a companion? What happened in your life that's the route you decided to take?
I was, when I separated, in I separated in October of 2008 from my ex-husband. And so at that moment, I couldn't really sell my house. So I wasn't in a position financially to move. And I, at the time, I was like making like a 40K salary working in the pharmaceutical industry. And so I actually wanted to leave the house so I could maybe go back to school. And so I needed an income, highly paid, you know, short term, to be able to make a lot of money in a short term.
Yeah, you needed quick money for sure.
Yeah, so I could leave the house and pay for an apartment, take care of my son, and go back to school. You know, we all hear about the world of escorts, you know, and some women do it to, you know, make ends meet and kind of for an extra, you know, salary. And I said, well, perhaps I can could do that, you know. I think I have the personality to do it. So I started doing some research. I did about 6 months of research, and I kind of experimented, like, you know, you won't believe this, but I said, well, let me see if I could, you know, just meet some odd, you know, some unknown person and just see if I could sleep with them. And so I ended up going to this swingers club. After the administration, you know, kind of did the run about the facilities, you know, to show me where everything was and how it worked. When I walked into the bath, you know, spa section, there was these older gentlemen, like, or men, against the wall, like sitting and masturbating. And I was like, wow, there's a lot of, you know, old, they're men here, you know, we're all the women. And I end up anyway, meeting these two cousins at more my age. And I kind of had a little fun with them. Didn't have sex, but, kind of connected with one of the cousins because he was a little bit more stable, emotionally stable. I found out his cousin was bipolar. So he was pretty intense. So I end up, anyway, leaving with the cousin that a little bit more stable, and I end up having sex at his place. Why I'm telling you this story is that I found out that the swingers club was a more catered to the gay population.
Oh, you were in the wrong swingers club, is what you were at.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. Well, I kind of gave up.
But you realized that you had something in you that you could be that fantasy girl and play a part.
Yes.
Because you're playing a part, right?
Oh, yes, for sure. So it's very easy to adapt to the person in front of me because I have I can gain a good sense of their personality and adapt and figure out, you know, what they need. So it's really easy for me.
So I know you're not supposed to ask a lady her age, but I'm going to be that bitch.
What?
How old were you when you started?
So,
unless this is like secret, you like to keep it a mystery. I totally understand that.
I advertise 35, but I'm, you know, actually a little older.
By the way, I've seen pictures of you, although I've never seen your face because you've blocked out your face on your socials. Mm-hmm. You are dead sexy. Holy shit, your body is incredible.
Thank you so much. I work hard.
You work hard, actually. You really do. You have a great body. You keep yourself in great shape. Obviously, you have to. Can we go back to can we go back to when you started working? Does your family know what you do for a living?
Oh, yes. They all know. So after my ex-husband was the first to know. Once I came back from my first trip in Toronto, I showed him the money and kind of looked at him and said, what's this? And I ended up, you know, telling him. He was a little shocked, but he was supportive and understanding. He understood that pretty fast. Wasn't really an issue.
And he doesn't question it with your son?
You'd be surprised, no, because my son at that time was pretty young. Eventually, I told him, I think when he was about 11, I told him. But I think 2 years after when I first started, I was starting feeling guilty of my best friend not knowing. So I ended up telling my best friend, and she was very, very understanding as well. Not only worried about my security, but besides that, she was all good about it. And then I think 2 years later, I told my sister. She was also worried about my security, so I had to reinsure and that I'm doing this. I screen and I do this properly. And then I think 1 year later, I told my parents, same issue, security. I was like worried for my safety. And after that, I think 3 years later, I told my son. The way I've, introduced it to my son and all, I think was key. Because at first I was, when I would, he would ask me where I was going and I would tell him, oh, I'm going, I have an appointment what would you do? So I said, I would say, well, I go and I meet with, people that, that are lonely and then that need someone to talk to and, a little section. And that was about it. And then when he came of age where he could, I think, understand, I told him what I did, and he said, oh, okay. He actually said, when I told, I didn't go in explicit details of what I do. So the way he symbolized, what I was talking about, imagine him like putting a finger out and kind of do a donut, donut hole with the other.
Oh, fingers, yeah.
Like the other hand, yeah. Kind of put one into the other. And he says, so is that what you do, Mom? And I said, yeah, pretty much. He goes, okay. So he said, made sure that what was important to me is that I needed to tell him before, his teens, because I have no shame of what I do, and I enjoy what I do, but there's a population that still have an issue with it, still a little bit taboo. So for that reason, I prefer telling him, before he became a teenager and he would find out through his friends or internet or maybe fall into my stuff or kind of put one and one together, So,
yeah.
And I'm not knowing, and I wouldn't want him to be, shocked and, that I betrayed I was able to trust him with this, secret, betrayed. And also for that reason, and the other reason is also his friends, other different teenage friends might talk about, escorts and prostitutes, and his vision might be tinted through what they say, and then kind of make his own idea, and then come to me and be upset or mad and not understand. So I kind of nipped it in the bud by saying that, I'm very happy what I do and I'm very careful, but it's not totally accepted by society, it's a bit taboo, and that's their problem, but there's nothing wrong with it. And so it's, a matter of choice. When I was telling it, this is how I'm able to take care of you and go to school and, so for me to be happy and to make you happy. So he understands, very supportive, and he understands. And he wished me good luck when I leave, before I leave. So, you know, have fun, or, you know, have a good meeting. And very supportive. Very lucky.
How long do you plan on doing this for? Like, how many, like, how old will you be when you figure you'll retire?
Well, you know, when they say, like, someone goes through life with maybe two, three, you know, career choices, you know, they kind of change a few times. I didn't plan to make this a career, like a, but it's actually my, you know, ending up being my second career, because I had a first career in the pharmaceutical industry, and now for 11 years, I mean, that's another, I think, a career, because I was 11 years in the pharmaceutical industry. So I wish I could tell you what I did, but people might put one and one together. And I wish I could tell, you know, I wish I could be more personal on my next, you know,
your next plans.
Yeah.
Oh, but the question is, that's okay. But the question is, how long do you plan on doing it for? This for?
So I have. I'm starting my master's degree in mental health next fall. This fall or in January. So I have another like 3 years, and then during that time I'll be, you know, developing my new business, my next. Probably another 3 years, max five.
Wow. Can I ask you, and I know that age is not always the best question. Hillary asked that, so let me ask the next one. Okay. Money. How much money can you make as a world-class luxury companion?
Because
I'd like to know if middle-aged chubby girls have a market in there.
Yes, they do.
If I know what a world-class companion makes, I can figure out what a bargain basement.
Yeah. I'd like to be a mid-level call girl. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So there's multiple factors because there's a market for every type. You know, there's a lot of men that love like chubby and even overweight.
Perfect.
Women. And love the 40 or in the 50s, you know, the mature.
Do they like them bitchy? Because I know somebody.
No, not really.
No, okay, well, that's too bad.
No. Unfortunately, there's a lot of women in this business that are that have big egos and, you know, feel very entitled. I think it's because of that personality, it makes it a bit difficult for them to be successful. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's a market. I mean, there's probably some missive type of men that, you know, enjoy that, to be, you know, kind of
dominated
and, you know, be told what to do. And so they might be, you know, very successful for all, you know, but for my part, for the men that come, I have a lot of men that complain about that. That, you know, that she's too bitchy, too entitled, and too thinks highly of herself, and you know. So,
okay, back to money. How much money could, let's just say you're working every weekend, how much money could somebody clear? We won't talk about money.
No. I can't, like, for my part, I can tell you that I'm very successful and I live pretty comfortably.
Like, do you have an hourly rate?
Yes. Well,
I guess every client's kind of different because they would be grandfathered in, like a weekly special versus rate per day.
So I'm going to Germany. I'm going to Spain or Portugal for a week in September. And he's paying me $10,000 for the week.
Whoa.
So, yeah. So, but if he becomes...
And paying for your trip. Holy moly.
Yep. So if he wants to see me again, I have a kind of arrangements. So if he sees me for an overnight, between an overnight and like a week, then it's a little cheaper. So, but it's five times. Like he has to see me five times during that week to have that benefit. So, but it's
kind of like your Tim Hortons card, right? Like after seven coffees, you get a free one.
I was going to ask, how is business during a pandemic? But if someone's taking you to Spain or Portugal in September, it's pretty good.
Yeah, well, I think Spain and Portugal are doing pretty good on the numbers. I think they're like having less than like 200 cases per day. So it's not. I think in Canada was allowed travel. So because we were supposed to go, I was supposed to meet him in Seattle in early June, and well, that was canceled. But I just to get back to your answering your question, because I feel like I haven't, but concerning the money and, you know, what's the potential that a lady could, you know, make. Are you just talking about escorting? Because, you know, there's the massage, you know, the ladies that do massages and that work for the agencies.
I'm talking about a high-class luxury companion, someone like you. What could be the top end?
Like, what would you make to go out for a date and spend the night with somebody?
A night, like an overnight?
Yes.
My overnight is 16 hours, typically like 7 p.m. to 11 a.m., something like that.
You stay for breakfast. How nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
I'm flexible. Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't doubt that.
So give me a number.
So in Montreal, like someone like that I met for first time. First time is like 3,000 for
shit.
And then
like you literally have to work once a week. That is just bullshit.
Christ.
And then I have a special like for the regulars that I have. It's 25 and some are 26 and I have 28. So.
So that's like good. That much all in full menu.
Yes.
Like.
Yeah.
Okay.
All inclusive.
For me, can I ask you something?
Uh huh.
I'm actually not going to ask it. I'm just going to say it. You must be so fucking good in bed. Like
oh, yes,
you must be so good in bed. God damn it! Good for you.
Yes. I've been told many times.
Apparently, people keep paying $3,000.
I don't even think I could get $300. Honest to God, I just lie there like a starfish. Yeah. Christ in a handbasket. Good for you. So,
but honestly, for the money part, I was able to climb to those amounts over time because of volume. So it was my way of lowering my volume. Because I was at one point, I was working 7 days a week, and I was like too much. So that's how I was able to raise and
supply and demand, baby.
That's right.
Supply and demand. Exactly. So
and
I have a question for you. You seem to be extremely gifted at making sure people get what they need, whether that's pleasure, whether that's connection, companionship. Mm-hmm. Do you ever get sick of worrying about other people? Like, who worries about you?
Oh, gosh, you're so sweet. Eventually, of course, like any other woman, I long for love and, you know, to maybe find a boyfriend at one point. I've tried in the past. They end up, you know, I had two boyfriends. They were clients that I had met, and they end up being a little bit too controlling for my taste. So I kind of put that aside. I know that it's possible for women in this business to find love and to have, you know, that loving and supportive boyfriend. I have one girl, one friend, but she knows two ladies in US, and that they're in, you know, very loving and supportive relationships, so it is possible. It's possible, and love the ladies out there that might be listening, so like, yeah, right. In one of my classes during my studies, there's a psychology and interpersonal relationship class. So there's a studies on fidelity where they've identified two types of intimacy, emotional and sexual. So they've observed that the, according to like the woman population, women base their intimacy on oriented emotional, like based on emotional, like, I don't know how to say this. It's more emotional. Than
yes, meaning, women are more meaning, emotional.
Yeah, you require emotional intimacy. Yeah.
So what it means is that they're less they're more forgiving when their partner cheats, because they know that what they have, the love they have, and how committed he is, and that, you know, especially like comes home at night, you know, and she's just more trust that he's committed and loves her. So, and you'd be surprised that a lot of men that I meet, they've told me that they've shared that they think they know that their wife know. I'm not saying this properly, but they think that their wife know. You know, when they kind of what they do on the side, so they kind of close their eyes. So I think and the other part of the study, like when they've observed the man population, they've concluded that the intimacy was more sexual. So then therefore less forgiving when their wife or girlfriend cheat. So the reason why, so now, of course, it's to the general population, so there's always exceptions. So there are women that the intimacy is more sexual and men that the intimacy is more emotional. So that's the reason why the women in this business, they can find true love when their boyfriend, like when the intimacy is emotional, you know, so
right.
they know their girlfriends are committed to them and loves them and not their client. So,
oh, for sure. But yeah. I just would imagine that there's like a lot of pressure on whoever becomes your partner to like really bring the A game to the sack,
mm-hmm.
because I mean, you're kind of an expert.
Yeah.
And I would imagine if you're going to settle down with somebody, you'd have high expectations.
For me, have I expectations or for him?
No, I would imagine if you're going to decide to settle down with someone, you uh-huh. would want them to be like an incredible lover because
oh.
you want to be worried about not having to worry so much about them.
Oh, you'd be surprised because I think the pressure is on them because I'm the expert. So
yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Okay, that's what, yeah. They feel intimidated, more intimidated that, you know, because I know, you know, more what I'm doing, and then they want to make sure that they please me. So I think there's more pressure on them to satisfy me. But of course, I'm an amazing lover.
Damn, girl.
You know, but when I had a boyfriend in the past, I mean, you know, he was pretty, very, very satisfied, you know, very content.
Oh, I bet.
Do you ever find you're like, I would be so lazy in my own relationship if I had to constantly, like when I'm working, constantly worrying about what other people need. When I finally got home to my own relationship, I would be hella lazy.
I have a high sex drive. So I find myself when I go out, I do the alcohol. Alcohol is when I go to the hotel room, to their place, their location. And I find myself that I come back, you know, and I'm back at home, like, midnight or 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, you know, and I'm kind of horny, you know, like I kind of end up having to masturbate, you know. So, you know, imagine if I had a man by my side.
God help him.
Yes, oh, yes. Correct. So, no, I find it's kind of stimulating and just enriches the sexual experience, you know, like especially if you, you know, have someone to share that with, you know.
Yeah.
And also for my, that's for me. I have a high sex drive, and but I've heard stories about other ladies, that it's not, you know, it's not the case. it's like you would imagine.
But you sound happy.
thank you. Well, I am.
Like, you sound like you own your sexuality. You know who you are. You have a goal in mind. You know that this isn't forever. This is for now. You're getting what you want, basically, from your life right now. I feel you are so empowered.
Oh, thank you. Well, that means a lot. I do. I've done, of course, I've worked on myself over the years, you know, struggling with low self-esteem and lack of confidence. And I do, believe it or not, I kind of have some social anxiety. So doing this with you guys is a bit difficult. I'm kind of taking myself out of my comfort zone to confront, to be, you know, to be able to talk in public.
You're killing it. You're doing great.
You are doing great.
Thank you.
Know what? Because you've taken yourself out of your comfort level, I'll try harder in bed and in your honor.
Okay. I'll hold you to that then. Thank you. I appreciate
it. Oh, Madeline, thank you so much for joining us on The Quick and the Dirty. It's been so great to get to know you a little bit.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm happy to be able to share this with you. It's been fun over the years.
It has. And what I'll do is, I know you have a website, so I will attach it to the podcast notes when this episode is released. So if anybody wants to reach out to Miss Madeline Fabre, they can. So thank you very much. We love you.
Thank you. I love you guys too.
This episode is over, but the conversation doesn't have to be. Follow Hillary and Sandra on social. Instagram at Hillary on Air, at SandraKiss1053. Twitter at Hillary Welch, at SandraKiss1053. And on Facebook at Quick and Dirty Podcast. Got a question? Email Hillary and Sandra, thequickandthedirty@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can download the podcast each week to your mobile device to listen offline. Find The Quick and the Dirty on frequencypodcastnetwork.com, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts.